Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.
Hello and welcome to the Survival Post, where we blend bushcrafting, prepping, and survival together in one location. So please join us as we learn together here at the Survival Post. Hey guys, and welcome back to the Survival Post. As always, I'm Casey.
I'm Jonathan.
And we are the Survival Post. Now, Jonathan, you and I were talking before we got this thing kicked off tonight, and we were discussing, you know, what would be a good topic tonight, and we kept coming back to the hurricane preparedness or emergency preparedness, disaster preparedness. But for us, you know, we'll go right with the first, which would be hurricane preparedness. Right. Now, I know we've done this show a couple of episodes ago, but I really feel, I believe you feel as well, that we need to touch on this just because we are in it full swing in hurricane season.
Well, we tried to mash a lot into 15 minutes. You remember we were doing the little 15 minute segments then instead of the one trying to go for an hour. So we tried to put a lot into 15 minutes. So we're going to try to give a good podcast here with quite a bit more information in it, and hopefully we can cover quite a bit more.
And that is our goal, you know, and I'm sure we're going to repeat some things that we did on the last episodes. I mean, but that's just the nature of the beast. So without further ado, let's just jump right into it. Now, as many of you know, Jonathan and I are from Southeast Louisiana. Not a lot of typhoons or blizzards or earthquakes or tornadoes, but we have the big infamous hurricanes, these big just massive creations of God that will destroy anything in its wake or path.
yeah, that pretty much explains it. So we can hang up now, you know.
Yeah, that's what, and the show's over. But they, you know, unlike, you know, and I'm not trying to say our natural disaster is better than your natural disaster by any means, but when a hurricane's coming, it's the most intimidating force of nature that I have ever witnessed. I've seen, you know, the aftermath of tornadoes when I lived in East Texas. But I mean, seeing a hurricane come at you and it's nice and calm, but you're watching the weather station and it's this huge red just cluster just takes up the entire Gulf of Mexico and it's coming directly at you.
You know, well, I mean, it's a little bit more than just a storm. You know, for the 2 weeks before that, we tend to sit here and watch them as they come all the way off of the coast of Africa. You know, and for 2 weeks, I mean, that's what everybody's watching. That's what everybody's talking about. You know, and we watch it, and you can just kind of feel that energy around that just culminating until finally it's here. You know,
right?
And you know, you get a kick out of it. You always hear that one person that was a holdout and waited to go get the last loaf of bread, and he gets there and
one
all
person
their,
one well, person
yeah, but he gets there and there's one package of hot dog buns, and it wasn't what he was wanting, but he picked it up just in case, you know. Oh, I always laugh about that, you know, because you hear about those stories. But you know, but it takes everybody's focus here away, you know, and it's aggravating, you know. And I'm that's part of why we're doing the show, but is because people wait to prepare for it. the 3 days before it hits is when it seems like everybody just kicks it into overdrive and starts doing it. It's like they didn't see it coming for 2 weeks, you know? And it's like,
right.
What?
Where
you
did
know?
That come from?
Yeah, and they sat there and watched it.
Wait a
you
minute.
Know?
I need gas.
Yeah.
I need water.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Those 3 days, you don't get it. When
right.
you wait that late, you don't get it because the people that prepare it already have. They've went, they filled their gas cans up.
So at the start of hurricane season, they got it.
Yeah.
Whether they needed it or not, because they can use it throughout the summer.
Yep.
But they went and got it beforehand. And that's pretty much what the basis of the show is going to be about tonight, you know, is being prepared for that emergency hurricane, or if y'all live where tornadoes are, or typhoons, or monsoons, or wherever.
Well, you know that up where I'm from, you're from the southern part of the state. I'm from the northern part. We tend to get the tornado end of it. You know, once it makes it up there, you know, we always seem to get more tornadoes and the harsh thunderstorms than we get the impact of the hurricane.
Yeah,
you know, we still get the same. It all plays out the same. Trees knocked down, powers out, people hurt. You know, for the next week, you know, so we get the same effect, but we get a different version of it.
Yeah, I know when Katrina came through, that was my first. I know I'm gonna show my age, but that was my first experience with texting. Because prior to that, you know, I was always, you know, a phone is for talking, not for texting. You know, I'm like, why do you have a phone if you're just going to sit there and text all day long?
I think that was probably what really kicked texting off. Because
yeah.
I can remember at that point, you know, everybody, if you needed to get in touch with somebody, that was the only way. Everything else was jammed. You couldn't make a phone call. On the landline, even you couldn't make a phone call on your cell phone, and there was a while there that a lot of radio stations were even jammed.
Yeah, the I know down here we have 105. Well, at the time it was oh Lord, it was an AM station. Break what?
I heard a bunch of background noise.
Yeah, it's my damn dog.
Oh.
That's why I'm looking around. He's flapping his ears back and forth. God.
All right. Anyways, keep going. Radio station.
So I know with the radio stations, we had, it eventually became 105.3. But that was like the only thing that was making it through. I mean, they had DJs from almost every radio station come together and broadcast on this one channel at different periods of the day, you know, giving them opportunities to reach each one of their listeners and explain to them what was going on. I know all the news stations picked up and I think went to Houston, if I'm not mistaken, or somewhere, just not here, but
I don't guess I was aware of that.
Yeah, it was. I mean, people pulled up and just took off. I mean, a lot of, and they were just bouncing signals through the radio stations and through the TVs, partnering up with different TV stations throughout their quote unquote network. So,
well, you know what? Well, let's start it off that way. Let's talk about Katrina and what that taught us, what that taught us, not just me and you, but the state, the people, you know, because we learned some hard lessons that we hadn't had since what was that last big hurricane back in, I don't know, 50s or 60s. I can't remember which one that was. I want to say, yeah, Betsy.
Betsy.
You know, that's the one all the old timers think about and talk about, you know, when that was it. So, I mean, we had a big gap in there. From that one on up until Katrina hit us. So, you know, we learned a lot of lessons there, you know, and I think for me, I think probably for you, especially talking about the prepper side of it, was the I hate the word, but the failures that happened after the hurricane, the breakdown of the infrastructure, just in every direction, you know.
I mean, to me, it clearly showed the CYA mentality.
Yes.
Of people in positions that have great power, and I'm kind of speaking in code right there a little bit. It's the people who made the decisions, the individuals who made the decisions for the people, left the people. That makes sense, you know.
They did.
It was like, well, we told you, got to go, peace out.
Well, then that was literally the message that you got.
Yeah.
You know, that was the short version, but that was what was said to us. So, you know, and because of that, we learned the lessons we had to have, you know. But, you know, I can remember just watching the news. Of course, I was in North Louisiana. We still had power. We were able to watch what was going on. The people down there in New Orleans, they didn't get to watch it on TV like we did. They were in the middle of it, you know, but we were sitting there watching people getting, you hear about the muggings, you hear about, I can't even remember the word now, but the looters, you know, everybody was being looted. And then not to mention, one of the big things I remember everybody talking about was the chemicals in the water, and what I'm getting at, the floodwaters. Mm-hmm. You know, they would drive down the road and you could just see chemical all in the water. You'd see dead fish everywhere, and these are fish that are, you know, miles from where they're supposed to be. They've washed up that far. Ditches just full of fish, and they're dying and rotting. You know, that's just disease waiting to happen.
I had an opportunity to speak with someone who, I know this is going to sound weird, but, you know, in New Orleans, they had the manhole covers and everything. Well, his job, even though it was, you know, 4 or 5 foot of water in the area he had to go to, was to go down, pop the manhole covers off, swim into the sewer system, and turn off the pipes in the sewer. Yeah, and that was his job. I mean, and he said he had to get so many shots. I mean, basically that was his last hurrah. I mean, he was done after that. But just because of that, and that's the same thing he said, was the chemicals mixed in with,
yeah,
you know, tons of other things.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, me neither. But we're digressing a little bit. Let's get back to topic here. But you know, I think you hit the nail on the head just a minute ago with saying there's always that one person who says, oh crap, there is a hurricane coming. You know, let me run out, because that one person thinks he's the only one who's thinking that. So when he gets to that store or when he gets to wherever he's going, he realizes there's 500 more who were thinking the exact same way he did. You know, I think I'll go out now and get it, you know, and then that's where the, you know, it's, I guess the fight or flight mentality kind of rolls in right at that moment for that individual, because now he realizes, I don't have water, I don't have food, you know, freaking, to him, the apocalypse is coming, you know, and how's he going to make it through it?
Yeah, well, and the problem is there's so many of them. And, you know, something we ran into, it wasn't that there were so many. It's just by the time it gets to that point, there's nothing left.
Right.
So you're stuck. And that's what happened during Katrina. People realized, okay, it's time to evacuate. Well, when they realized that there wasn't gas at the gas stations.
Man, they were during this contraflow and all that. In case people don't know what the contraflow is, that's basically where you start going in the opposite direction that the normal flow of traffic goes. So if you have an eastbound and a westbound traffic, they initiate contraflow, and then every lane on the interstate, eastbound and westbound, will go in one direction.
Right, and that's just to get everybody out. Get
everybody out. You cannot enter into that city. People were running out of gas, sitting in the contraflow line.
All right. Well, I tell you, you know, we keep rambling about that.
We do.
You know?
We do.
So let's talk this way, Casey. 2 weeks before the hurricane hits, what are you doing? What have you done before that point?
What have I done before that? For me personally, and I'll speak from experience because I do this every year, okay? I make sure I have every car topped off. If it's not topped off, if it hits half a tank, I top it off again. I do not let my car go below, either one of my vehicles go below a half a tank of fuel.
All right. And that half a tank, that's your cushion.
That is my cushion. Right.
And that's what people need to understand about what you're saying right there. That's not your emergency. That's your cushion. That way you've ran around, you've done everything you need to. Make sure that half a tank is your empty. That's right. Where empty needs to be in your head. I've ran out of gas at half a tank. That's because when they come and they tell you, all right, no, we're making you get out of your home and go north, you've still got gas to go north.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the gas line, I have two 14-gallon gas tanks, one for each car that's on wheels, has the little spigot. You can get them at your Tractor Supply or Lowe's or somewhere like that. Has a little spigot, looks just like a gas tank handle. So you can just set it down on the ground or set it on the truck bed and just top off the gas. So if stuff goes down, I grab those. I can put one in each car. That gives me almost a whole tank of gas for either one of my vehicles if needed. It's also utilized where if I have a full tank of gas and I do come across that individual who may need my assistance, who's ran out of gas sitting in that ContraFlow, I can assist if needed. Now, I do say that with a side note, with a sidebar, be very careful in these situations. If you have and they don't, pretty soon you're not going to have if you get my drift on that.
Yep.
So I've got that squared away. I've also have at least three of the 24 packs of water in my garage. The bottled water, Kentwood, great value, doesn't matter who you get, okay? A bead of water, doesn't matter. I have three cases of those. As well as throughout the year, I save up my 2-liter bottles, apple juice bottles, grape juice bottles, large Gatorade bottles. I clean them out, I fill them up with water, and I throw them in my deep freeze. So in my deep freeze right now, I probably have about 15 of them. So you're looking at 1 to 1.5 liters each. So they're frozen solid in the bottom of my deep freeze right now. In case I do lose power, those will take time to melt. You know what I mean? So it will stay cold in my deep freeze and keep things going a little bit longer. But as a side note to that one, if I need the water once my three cases of 24-count water have ran out, I can utilize those as drinking water as well.
Right.
And those have 1 to 1.5 liters of fluid in each one of them. That's just on my water side. But I also use them for my Yetis, my Yeti coolers. Instead of dumping ice into them, I'll take those out and I'll stick those in there to keep things cool instead of just having loose ice laying around everywhere. On the food side is going to be up to you. It's you and your family likes. It needs to be food that you're going to eat, your kids will eat, your wife or husbands will eat, and quite possibly your next door neighbors, your grandparents, and your mom or dad might eat. It needs to be something hearty. It needs to be something easy. At this point, you can search the web. You're going to see a lot of pros and cons versus dehydrated meals, Mountain House meals, MRE meals. And it's all having to do with the water consumption, the water used to reconstitute those food items.
Right.
Because you're taken away from it being utilized for you. As the sole purpose of replenishing your fluids to reconstituting a food that once you eat it, your body's working, so your body's going to need more water intake to help facilitate the breakdown of that food, so you will need more water. So you've just used twice as much water as you normally would. So it's, like I said, this is where you start getting into a is it good for it or is it not good for it? You know, like we use, like I keep flour in my freezer as well. Because we'll make our own bread during these times. Learn to cook outdoors. Learn to cook on a charcoal pit. Learn to cook on an open fire.
Well, you know, while you're on that topic of learning to do something outside during a hurricane, you know, something that we do every hurricane, we have about 10 5-gallon buckets that we stick under the edge of the roof. And as that rain's coming off, they're filling up.
Yep.
We're not going to use that to drink or bathe. That's just to flush the toilets.
Yep. That's a great point.
You know, once the power goes out, your water quits usually, unless you're out in the middle of nowhere and you've got your own system. But even then, it probably will go down. But, you know, we keep that water just to flush our toilets.
That's a great, great point. Flushing toilets, see, because... Man, I'll go outside.
I mean, for a while we were the same way during the hurricane. But that was our plan, you know. And then finally, 10-15 years ago, we just realized, why not just stick some buckets of water out there?
Yep, that's a good
idea. Because you're getting plenty of water.
You're true. That is so true.
If you got a little swimming pool or something, leave it out there.
Oh, a swimming pool is an excellent source to utilize water catchment.
Right.
I had a 55 gallon food grade water bucket that I would use to collect rainwater during this time, but it would also have a secondary use of had a spigot down at the bottom that I would water my garden with. I'd just use gravity to run down. But going back to the food prep and everything.
Well, before you do that, I want to go back to your gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
One big thing about modern gas, make sure you know, whatever you keep, you need to rotate it, and you need to use that gas ever so often, because it can go bad and that can damage your vehicle and plus other things.
Yeah, I guess I should go into a little detail about the particular type of fuel that I do get. I'm lucky enough and fortunate enough to have a gas station that has non-ethanol fuel. So I do pay a little more for it, but I highly recommend that for any long-term storage, or any, long-term storage in a generator or lawnmower, weed eater, of things of that nature. And once you get your gas, please add an additive to it.
Right.
It'll help it not break down, clump up, get black, whatever it does.
And along those lines, make sure you start your generator every 2 or 3 months at least, because that's another one of those things that people wait till the last minute until the hurricane's about to hit, then they go out and check it. Well, it's too late then. You're not going to get somebody to come repair it. You're not going to even be able to go buy a new one, you know, the day before the hurricane hits. Go out and crank it occasionally. Make sure it runs. Check the oil and all the vitals.
You know, I know when I check mine, it's generally about every fourth mowing of my yard, because I'll bring my generator to the backyard, fire it up, and then fire the generator up, and then fire up my lawnmower and mow my yard.
Right. You let it run for a while.
I let it run the entire time I do my yard. Now, people say, well, why do you do that? It's pretty dumb. Well, it's a little bit of OPSEC involved in that as well. Just because... Yeah, I might not want my next door neighbor to know I have a generator just yet. When push comes to shove, eventually they're going to know that I have one. But until that point, you know, if I want to be a little secret about it, like I said, I'll run that lawnmower at the same time I'm running my generator.
You know me, I'm not going to bash the whole secret side of it, because you prepare to take care of you.
Right, exactly.
And just as soon as one person finds out, somebody else is going to find out, then another person. Yep. And you are, you know, you're going to indirectly be raided. If they don't have anything, they're going to come and start begging. Yeah. And, you know, eventually depending on how strong you are mentally of a person, you know, you may not be able to hold out, and you probably might start giving your own stuff away. And that's I'm sorry, they didn't prepare.
Right.
You know.
You know, and if you have your community or the area that you live in or the countryside or whatever, you know, meet your neighbors, make friends with your neighbors. Because when everything breaks loose and an emergency breaks down, you know, and you need to jet out, but they're staying, they'll watch your stuff. You know, if they leave and you tell them, hey, I got your stuff, buddy, everything's going to be all right, I'll keep an eye on it, then that's your job, man. I mean, in times like this, this is when, you know, this is what defines you. You know, is an emergency, is something out of the ordinary. If you break your word on that, you're no good at all, man.
Yeah.
That's just the way I kind of view it. But I'm veering way off course here. Yeah. I want to get back to the food. On the food side of it, I just reiterate the importance of having comfort food. Okay. Not only do you need comfort food, you need what I like to call rib sticking food. Stuff that's going to stick with you pretty much all day long, because you will be outside working. You'll be cutting trees, mending fences, just outside sweating, and you're going to need all that protein and carbohydrates back in your system.
But it's not just that. It's that comfort. It's that one – it's another thing that makes you think everything's going to get back to normal,
mm-hmm.
You know, and back, you know, speaking of comfort, you know, one thing that I learned through the last few hurricanes I've been through is make sure you got some games or something for the kids to do.
Oh, without a doubt.
You know, we got invited to go ride out a hurricane at a cousin's house, and we got there and we were the only ones that had brought anything for the kids to do. So we had like eight kids in this house, mm-hmm. and they're all sitting there bored to death. We've got two little girls, so all these boys are trying to play little girl games, and it don't work. You know, they're better off sitting there bored. So
I totally agree completely.
You know, and when it's raining outside, you're not going to want to let them go outside and play, even though they want to. But anyways, you know, just you're talking about the food. You know, I was thinking a minute ago while you were talking about the dry fruit versus whatever you want to get. You know, we stock up on canned foods. Mm-hmm. That's our plan. You know, we've got a 2 or 3 month supply of just canned foods in our cabinet, and that's what we do. And the reason I do that is because I don't want to use my water to rehydrate food. I don't want to have to use too much of my water to cook with, because if that's all my water I've got, you know, when you live in town like we do, it's hard to get water at those times when you need it, especially once the power goes out and you can't even get tap water. My point is, you know, just with the foods, just, I mean, I kind of lost my train of thought there, but you know, it is all about what you want. But think about it before you get to that point. What's your priority? You know, do you want the canned food? Was that what you prefer? To me, it's tastier.
Is that your comfort food?
Right. Is that your comfort? Right.
You know, because I can tell you right now, Jay, my wife will not eat an MRE.
And I tell you what, you know, I did that class here 4 or 5 weeks ago now, and I have regretted eating. I ate one MRE there, and I regret it.
Oh man, it's, you know, but I tell you what, you know, I'm kind of getting on the MRE kick now. I tell you what, when you get the MREs with the heaters in them, to warm up your food and everything. Oh man, that's, to me, that's a godsend.
Yeah. I keep all of those, and I use those, you know, myself, I use them during hunting season as pocket warmers.
Oh, Jesus. People don't do that. Okay. Yeah. Don't do that.
If you don't really know how to use them, that can burn you.
It will burn you. It will blow up. Yeah. Let's see. Let me get back on track real quick. With, you know, the comfort food, the water, it's basically up to you and everything. Now, getting into, you mentioned games for the kids, but you need something to occupy time. Idle hands, you know, are not good things. You have to be busy during these times. While you're doing something at the house, cleaning or getting putting things together or whatnot. Oh, speaking of putting things together, make sure you have non-powered tools. Hammers, screwdrivers, axes, sledgehammers, saws, plenty of screws, especially plenty of nails, a file or something to sharpen your tools with, or if you got, you know, gasoline burning, chainsaws or whatnot, then yeah, utilize those because you're going to be working, Bubba. I mean, that's just no matter what you hit.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not just that. Know how to use them.
Yeah.
Every class we do, we have to teach so many people at the beginning of the class how to use basic hand tools.
And don't get us wrong. We are not complaining about doing that, about teaching anybody how to use a basic hand tool.
No,
that's
just
not what we're saying.
It's simple to learn before you get to that point. There's videos online of how to use handsaws, how to use the old fashioned hand drills,
mm-hmm.
That's our point. Yeah, he's right. We're not bashing it. We don't mind teaching. We enjoy teaching, but you can learn it on your own before you get there.
It's the little things, you know, that will wind up biting you in the butt. You know, what's that old fable? Oh Jesus, about the elephant, you know, the big powerful, or was it the lion? You know what I'm talking about in a minute, and he gets a splinter.
No, man, I gotta admit, I probably haven't heard it.
Oh my gosh, whatever. Well, it's basically, you know, hey, he's a big powerful man, blah blah blah, or animal, king of the jungle, whatever, gets a splinter and he turns into like a bowl of jelly because he's in so much pain he does not know how to take it out, basically. Oh. And you know, and I might be way wrong on this, probably get a comment or two. like, dude, you don't know what you're talking about. Fuck, yeah, that parable goes.
Yeah, leave that alone, Casey. You're not a storyteller anymore.
yeah, the story 10 days are over, right?
Yeah,
so. But, you know, we're back to that 2 week. What have I prepped? I've kind of went through that. Another thing, okay, fill your tub up with water.
Oh, that's one I've never.
Stop up your tub. And just fill it up with water. I have these things that I purchased that actually go into your tub. It's like a tub bladder. And then it has a siphon pump on it. So once it fills up, you know, it goes, fills up to the size of your tub, and in the middle has a pump that you can get the water out of it with. That's a great, you know, tool to have, during emergency situation, because, you know, if it floods or whatnot, your water source might have just now become contaminated.
Right.
So having that beforehand is always a plus. If by any means if your emergency situation does go past 3-4 days, possibly even a week, I hope you know how to wash clothes by hand.
Yeah. You know, we ran into that. A lot of people ran into that. And didn't know how to react to it. You know, I was fortunate that we all did. We grew up that way.
Mm-hmm.
But man, so many people don't know those. And those are the things that we were talking about just a minute ago with the hand tools. The things that you can learn to do with your hands that don't require electricity, you can put a little time and just learning it. It doesn't take much. Watch a video or two and just give it a little bit of attention. It doesn't take a whole lot, you know.
Yeah. I mean, basically what it, you know, what to me, what God is doing, what Earth is doing, is hitting a little reset button for a very short period of time. You know, let's reset for a minute in this area. Let's right. you go back down to the way your quite possibly your great grandparents actually lived. with no electricity. You had to go get your water. You had to wash your own clothes. You had to cook. You had to make your bread. And there was no cars, you know?
Something I've been sitting here listening to you while you've been giving your spiel, you know, a big thing for me that we ran into in North Louisiana that affected us is the people coming from the South. A lot of them that were evacuating didn't have their plans together on how they were going to. So let's talk about that for a minute. What is your evacuation plan?
Well,
you know, go ahead.
I can tell you my real quick, you know, down and dirty evacuation plan, because when it comes to an evacuation plan, by the time, in all truth and honesty, you know, by the time you do utilize your evacuation plan, it's dirty. It's not anything nice, organized, clean, or anything like that. It's a hurry up and go.
It's a hurry up and get out of there, but unfortunately, it takes forever.
It does. That's where having that quote unquote bug out bag or quote unquote go bag, get out of dodge bag, whatever you want to call it, this is the time to have it ready. And if you have enough time, hopefully it's a bug out Rubbermaid container, you know, or two, that will have food. Because I can tell you right now, if anybody comes to my house and they don't bring stuff with them, we're going to have problems.
Yeah. Well, you know, but there you go. There's another big topic that we ran into. If you're going somewhere, call and let those people know you're coming.
Yep.
You know, cause that was our, that
have
was
that we ran in into. Our, yeah, have that already in your evacuation plan. Hey, if a category whatever comes my way, I am coming to you. Be ready. I probably won't be able to call you.
Right. You know, and it's that simple. That person needs to know. That way they're not in bed in the middle of the night and suddenly they get a knock, because during a hurricane or during those type of events and you get a knock on your door in the middle of the night, you're going to be met with a gun where we live.
Oh yeah.
You know, and that's what happened. You know, I woke up and I grabbed my pistol, went to the door, and it's a cousin, you know, he's needing shelter, but I mean, it's dark outside. We don't have power. Mm-hmm. I'm using flashlights to see everything. You know,
right.
So,
right.
You know, it's just one of those little things you don't think about that, man, if he'd have drove all that way and got there, and what if I wouldn't have opened the door for him?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so call ahead.
If you're able to. Yeah.
You know, and then along with planning, make sure you take your important papers, you know, wedding, marriage certificates, birth certificates,
if you
social
have
social security cards.
Yep. If you have the means, dump them down to a scan disk, a little jump drive. You know, it's a lot easier to carry one of those things or a portable hard drive than it is the actual documents. You know, I know that's what I have personally for me and my family.
Right.
Everything's dumped down to a hard drive that I can just grab and go. But like I was going back to the Rubbermaid containers. Yeah, I have food for me and my family in a Rubbermaid container that will last me, my wife, and my son 90 days, just right. One Rubbermaid container. So,
yeah, but you know, and that's, that was a big thing for us when it got time for us to evacuate. The one time that we did, which was Katrina, it made it that far north that we had to bail. You know, we didn't think about that. We didn't think about grabbing the important stuff. And we, you know, for us, it was nothing more than just grabbing the actual safe they were in. You know, we've got one of those little safes that's about the size of a binder, you know, but we left it at home, and it was something we didn't think about, you know, and that's why I kept bringing up the whole time was, let's talk about the lessons learned from Katrina, because that's where 90% of Louisiana learned their lessons.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you know, and I think unfortunately, you know, you know, your whole lessons you learned versus the lessons I've learned versus the lessons that Joe Bob or Ellie Mae or whoever lives down the street, each one of our lessons will be different. They will have the same structures. If they will have the same backbones, but they will each have a different route.
Right. Well, you know, and that's the thing, but have that plan ahead of time. And that's why I mentioned to you at the beginning of our show here was to, What do you do 2 weeks ahead? What do you do a week ahead of time? What do you have that you're not really planning 2 weeks ahead? You've just got it in the first place, and that's your gasoline, your water, and your food. It's just there,
right?
You know, and that can apply for so many disasters as it is, you know. And then, you know, you just start thinking about what are you going to do to that time leading up, and as it gets closer, what parts of your plan are you going to initiate? So, and you know, we're probably getting close to our time right here, Casey. I know on my end, I've got a couple things I'm going to have to go do. But is there anything? I'm sure there's plenty we haven't talked about. But is there anything important we need to get in here before we get out of here today?
I think some of the most important things is, you know, you say the three I's religiously.
Oh, yeah.
And it can be utilized here. Real quick, Jay, go through the three I's real quick.
Well, the three I's, you know, you've got inventory, improvise, and initiate. And it's that simple. Your inventory, what do you have? What do you, and that counts right down to what's in your pockets. And, you know, mm-hmm. What do you have in your house? What do you have in your truck? What do you have in your office? Then it's improvise. How can you use that to get what you need? You were talking about the fill your bathtub up with water. That's another source of stock water. You got a swimming pool. That's another source of stock water. That's improvising with your bathtub and your swimming pool to get something you need.
Mm-hmm.
And then initiate. Do that thing that you planned. You know, when you sit there and you say, okay, when it gets 3 days before a hurricane gets here, I'm going to fill my bathtub up with water. Don't get to that 3 days and say, I'm going to wait one more day.
Right.
No, initiate, you know, and it's that simple when it comes to the three I's. And so one more time, that's just, you know, inventory, improvise, and initiate.
Excellent. Now, guys, we can go on and on and on about this subject and about this topic. As you could probably hear, we were both kind of going back and forth with different things. We do apologize about it going here and there and there and here. It's just once our brains get going, that's the way it just comes out sometimes, guys.
But you know, hey, we want to hear your feedback. What didn't we hit that you think's important? Or, you know, not just what you think is important. Send us something telling us what you learned. What lessons did you get out of the hurricanes?
We want to know what you do as well. What's your preparedness plan? What do you stock up on as far as food and water and different little things? But guys, we hope you learned something on this episode. This one always hits home for us. So with that being said, I've been Casey.
I'm Jonathan.
And we've been the Survival Post.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Welcome to Total Wine and More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine and More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in store or online at TotalWine.com.